Back to another episode of the Daft on Draft podcast, and this is a very special one for yours truly, because we are talking about the NFC least, the NFC East, who is not the NFC least in this case, because the media loved their drafts. Like, as a division, I don't think any of the divisions that we've gone over have had more complete success from top to bottom and high-end success according to the NFL media when it comes to grading these drafts. Will we be harsher on them than the media were? We are usually a bit harsher, but these are some pretty good drafts, and I am not doing this alone. I am with my co-host Corey Kinnon, who is not wearing a hat today, I would like to point out. And I would also like to point out, I failed to address the elephant in the room, which is my haircut in yesterday's episode, which is upsetting.
Yeah, I did notice it, but I didn't say anything. But it is nice. You're looking
you know,
slick.
It's a little bit of a change up. It's a little bit of a change up. It is what it is. I just went for it. Got that. Got a shave. I was just feeling different yesterday, and so I went and got it. But anyways, the NFC East draft. We had the Washington Commanders come in, according to the media, at number 19, tied with the Chicago Bears. Still over a 3.0 GPA. That's a B. That's pretty darn good. The Cowboys were 7th. 3rd in the division. The Eagles were 5th, and the Giants were 2nd. Now, I think the one that I'm the most surprised about are the Giants being 2nd. But that is mostly because we hate one pick in particular.
Yeah.
But we will get to it. And we will not get to it first, because we are going from descending or ascending order, which means we are starting with Washington. And I do feel like Washington gets hurt in some of the ways that some of these other teams that we've talked about have gotten hurt. And the fact that they just didn't have much draft capital to work with in the first place.
Yeah. They,
two picks inside the first 2 days, and they only had 5 total picks. And I really fail to look at any of these picks and say that I dislike a single one of them, because I really truly like everything that they did here. I like everything that they did. And so for me, like, just right off the bat, I'm going to give them a better grade than the NFL media did, because in my opinion, you can only do with what you can work with what you got, and what they did with what they had, I thought was absolutely fine.
I thought so too. Again, starting off at the top, I think the Connerly pick is a good one. Again, you can never have too many offensive linemen, and immediately prepping for the future.
Do you want to dock a little bit because they went Connerly instead of Simmons?
Health wise,
Simmons was your number one.
Simmons was my number one. Maybe a little bit, but again, health wise, where's Simmons at with the knee? Connerly's healthy. What I do think is interesting is drafting offensive tackle round one after trading for Laremy Tunsil. And maybe they have an agreement with Laremy Tunsil that, like, you're not going to get a new contract. But that was one of the reasons that Houston traded him, is because, again, he's been signing the short-term deals because he wants to keep renegotiating every year.
Yeah.
And so maybe they do see Tunsil as a 2-year guy. I mean, they could cut him after the season with no dead money. So, but I doubt this is a 1-year rental. I mean, he's 31, so who knows?
Yeah.
But I will be interested to see how they get Connerly on the field in year one. Like, is he going to play guard? This is the Banks conundrum, right? Is he going to play guard? Is he going to play right tackle? Do you trust him to play right tackle when he has some, like, core issues and some, like, hand issues that he...
Oh, yeah, I don't care about left or right. When it comes to that, there's when it comes to that, there's no point. His feet are fine. And that is what would really bother me. Now, it could be like a Roger Rosengard thing where like his right hand is just terrible. Mm-hmm. Like Rosengard's left hand was just awful. Like there was just no way he was going to play left tackle at the NFL level. It was good enough to where he could survive inside counters, but like if he actually had to protect the arc with that hand, like he's just so right hand dominant, it wouldn't work. And so like if that's a situation with Connerly, then yeah, you have to worry about it. But I think with how athletic he is, like for me, core strength, what's the difference between coming off the left side and the right side? At least if he's playing on the right side, the quarterback can see him getting punched through the freaking chest. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so that doesn't really bother me as much as a footwork issue or like a legitimate striking issue or like a hand dominance issue, but it would.
That's fair. Yeah, I think it's fair.
Plus he moves people in the run game, which
he does.
Makes me feel better too.
Mm-hmm. So I think he's probably going to start at right tackle.
Yeah, and maybe you do just develop him for a year. It'd be weird for a contending team to do that, but they were a contending team, and
they're
probably just trying to set the future up for their unbelievably athletic string bean quarterback who they desperately, desperately need to remain healthy if he's going to play as well as he did last year as a rookie. So I don't mind making an early investment. And it feels a lot like a Philadelphia draft in the developing for the future, because Trey Amos is another guy who I think has steps to take before he's there all the way. However, that size, length, athleticism is a perfect fit for Dan Quinn corner. It really is.
Yeah, it is. I think this is appropriate value for Trey Amos. I think we overshot the moon talking about first round stuff with Trey Amos.
Yes, I thought so too.
But I do like the value here where they got him. And so I'm completely cool with that. It's a team that has needed cornerback, and like I've been mocking corners to them since the dawn of time, the beginning of the cycle, because even the Marshawn Lattimore trade, he barely played. It doesn't do anything for you. And you can cut him at any point in time with no dead money. And so, but even outside of that, that's it in terms of cornerback play. Benjamin St. Juice, sure, you know, but there's a reason they were.
Well, they're going to move on from St. Juice. And you know, Sandra still was.
Oh, he's awesome.
Unbelievable, but he's 5'8". Like, can he?
Yeah, but he's playing like, outside.
I know
he's
playing well on there. The outside and everything, and it didn't really seem to matter all that much, but it's just not a Dan Quinn corner. That's the crazy part about it. It's just not what we're used to seeing from a Dan Quinn corner. Jalen Lane.
Really Turbo slot. Player. Yeah.
Really fun player. Mm-hmm. We'll do a little bit of everything. He'll be the return man, I'm sure, in Washington. I can't imagine he wouldn't be.
I think he fits that room really, really well, too. They got Debo to kind of do some manufactured gadgety stuff, which might be what Debo needs to be reduced to, because the juice is kind of a little lost compared to where he was 2-3 years ago. Terry, who can win vertically, who can win on the vertical plane. So getting a turbo slot. Everywhere.
Let's be real.
Turbo slot who can take the top off from the seam. I think Jalen Lane can run just about any route as well. So I think that's a really fun fit right there in that wide receiver room.
And another fun fit, a super duper athletic linebacker in Kane Medrano from UCLA, somebody who legitimate sideline to sideline range with him. And not necessarily like too small. I think he's 230. Which, you know, for a modern NFL linebacker is, you know, right in the sweet spot, it seems. But I think he ran like a 4.46 at the combine. I think he was the fastest linebacker there. Mm-hmm. And you can see that on tape. Listen, he was a sixth rounder. He would have gone a lot sooner if he was good at processing and getting downhill quickly and some of the nuance of playing linebacker. But in the sixth round, I am absolutely okay with taking athletes, because in the sixth round, you're looking at core special teamers, and that's an athlete that you can use as a core special teamer. The real highlights in round 7, because Corey Crosky Merritt didn't play but one game for Arizona this year, and it was against New Mexico, his former team. And his tape at New Mexico is freaking awesome. If it weren't for eligibility issues this year, I think he's going late day two, early day three. And this is a guy who has legitimate juice. So, and a very much like a little bit of an Isaiah Pacheco, like not huge runner, but like has that I'm going to run through your face mentality as well. So just a really fun player that fits that culture in Washington.
Yeah. And he's got a chance to get early touches too. That running back room isn't super, super deep. So he's got a chance to carve out a role year one. So that's a really fun draft for Washington. Again, they scored the lowest composite ranking here, GPA, based out of the, again, composite of all of the expert draft grades here. 19th, tied 19th at the Bears. Again, we'll probably grade that a little bit higher when we come back to it. Next highest, the NFC East was graded really well. Next highest was 7th overall. So the next of these final three teams are 7th or higher, and that's the Dallas Cowboys here sitting at 7.
Yeah,
your kind of Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, my kind of Dallas Cowboys. Tried to make an offensive line entirely consisting of Tyler's, but ended up getting rid of Tyler Biotish. And for transparency purposes, I mixed up Cooper Beebe and Tyler Biotish, and we cut all of that out of the podcast because it made me look like a big old dummy as a Cowboys fan. But, you know, we have those kind of brain farts every now and then. No, Booker, huge need. I think he's a really good player. 12th overall is a little bit high, especially for somebody who tested like that. And I'm sure that kind of went into the Cowboys grade being 7th instead of, you know, a top three draft. But man, the value they got elsewhere in this draft is pretty awesome. Because we were seeing a lot of, obviously, Revel going round one early. That tailed off as he obviously tore his ACL, and we kind of figured he would end up on day two after that point, even in a bad corner class. But Donovan Ezeruakwu is somebody who was getting first-round hype as well throughout the process, somebody who I have called the most hilarious pass rusher I've ever watched in my life. I'm very excited to watch a lot more of him. And I do think it's a little bit of an interesting fit alongside Micah Parsons because they are similarly outside arc rushers, not very big power. Well, I mean, Micah's powerful and Donovan is an aggressive run defender, but I wouldn't say that he's necessarily that edge setting consistent run defender on the outside, which is interesting for a team that already doesn't defend the run all that well. However, Jadon Blue in round 5 is the juice that they needed at running back. And him catching the ball out of the backfield, they needed weapons for Dak Prescott. They waited until round 5, but I do think that they got a pretty good weapon in Jadon Blue. And then they went out and traded for a psychopath at wide receiver. So they went out, they got Pickens to number 2 for CD's number 1. And I think they are trying to round that roster into a legitimate contender this year after acting like they did last year when they really didn't.
Yeah, I'm fine with Booker at 12. Like, I probably wouldn't have done it. Again, I thought Donovan Jackson was a better guard, prospect to begin with. But I knew, like, everybody kept, like, mocking Tet McMillan, who probably would have been the pick if he was on the board, things like that.
Yeah.
And even I was mocking Tet McMillan. But, like, there was something deep within my soul that was like, Jerry just saw Zach Martin retire. Jerry's not going to skip a beat trying to replace Zach Martin.
Nope.
Like, didn't skip a beat. And that's exactly what happened here. Because he gets success. Like, he's seen success. I wouldn't say it was him that got the success, but he's seen success of drafting offensive linemen in the first round. And I feel like anytime that there's a hole and he has a chance to do it, he's going to do it. I mean, we're talking about Zach Martin. We're talking about Travis Frederick. We're talking about Tyler Smith. So, like, it just made sense. A hole opened up along that offensive line that needed filled. So why, like the Cowboys, Jerry Jones is 80 years old. He's going to be a ground and pound guy at heart. And that's exactly what they did here. Ezeraku,
not to mention historically offensive linemen do have, I believe, the highest hit rate of any first round picks. So
yeah,
makes sense.
Ezeraku over Skorton is fun for you, especially you've been a Skorton guy since day one, and they had the chance right here to do it. Revel at 76 is a home run. There's rumors that he might have had a setback is why he fell in his ACL recovery, is why he fell to 76, but which isn't great for a guy who's already 24 years old.
The Cowboys don't care about that.
Yeah. But again, if he's playing day one, then that's all that matters. If he's ready by training camp, that's all that matters.
They drafted Jalen Smith.
Yeah. I don't have any strong opinions on these day three picks outside of Jay Toya, who I think is awesome and who might be a replacement for a guy they drafted in the first round a couple of years ago.
Nah, Mozzie's playing a lot better now. He's playing a lot better now. He's a starter. There's absolutely no doubt about it. Shamar James is the one that intrigues me on day three out of all of these guys. I think a Johnny Cornelius can be a swing guard, maybe tackle.
He's a utility guy for sure.
But I think he's a utility guy at the NFL level. We've kind of talked about that when we were talking about the Oregon offense in totality. But Shamar James is somebody who really stood out to me at the Senior Bowl. I thought he played really well. And so getting a little bit of depth at linebacker, a position where they've really, really been hurt by injuries over the last couple of years, is a good slot to fill.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. All right. Let's move on to the Philadelphia Eagles, the Super Bowl champs here. And more of the same here. The Philadelphia Eagles don't make drafting much harder than it needs to be.
They sure don't. Jahad Campbell, Andrew Mukuba, Ty Robinson, Mac McWilliams, Smile Mondman. What a phenomenal first five picks. Phenomenal first five picks. And they went out later on day three and got a gunslinger, an absolute dude at quarterback to come in and be the backup for them. Cameron Williams, who we adored early in the year and completely fell off late, but has a ton of potential. This is what the Philadelphia Eagles do. They draft guys on day three who have a ton of athletic potential, and they are going to develop. Jeff Stoutland is going to develop Cameron Williams into the next left tackle for the Philadelphia Eagles for a decade. I meant right tackle, because it's going to be a couple more years for Lane at right tackle, I think.
Uh-huh.
But they're going to develop Cameron Williams into his heir apparent. And then Antoine Power Island, again, getting another dude in round six who is a good football player. It's what the Eagles do, man.
The Powell Ryland pick feels like we whiffed on the Bryce Huff signing, so let's go get a DPR who could potentially. That's kind of what it feels like there, to go out and get Antoine Powell Ryland that late. But again, ultra productive at Virginia Tech, has some nice bend, has some nice juice off the edge, not going to play through contact at all, but has some nice juice there. I thought it was interesting that they took Miles Hinton over Cam Williams here.
Yeah.
They trade CJ Gardner Johnson, then immediately draft Andrew Bakuba. Like, just come on, man.
It's what they do, man.
Yep, just what they do there. I thought the Ty Robinson pick was probably my least favorite pick there, just because I feel like he's a gym class hero more than like his tape shines as a good player. Where it's just
going out and getting a gym class hero is really all you need to do when you already have Jalen Carter and Jordan Davis in there.
Yeah, that's fair. But Smile Mondon, dude, like, they just made Zach Bond an All-Pro after four bad years in New Orleans. And like, Smile Mondon has a little ways to go developing his eyes and his technique a little bit, but like, that dude's a freak. And so if you told me in 3 years, like, oh yeah, Smile Mondon is a really good starting will linebacker at the NFL level, I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense. So yep. This draft is cool. This draft is cool. And Drew Kendall is a very Cam Jurgens-esque kind of player. So getting another utility-ish interior offensive lineman there to kind of shore up that rotation is what it is. Like, I was at Shrine Bowl when he was there down there in Frisco. one of the better offensive linemen there, one of the better players there. So can't argue with this Eagles draft at all. The Jahad Campbell pick, though, man, my goodness, they just keep doing it. And again, Jahad fell because he has medical red flags. Like, his knees and his shoulder got flagged. Obviously, he just had the labrum surgery, but or both shoulders and knee, not knees and shoulder, shoulders and knee is what it was. But again, so did N'Kobe Dean, and he's starting for them, and they got him later than this. So it's just very much the same. Don't make it harder than it has to be. Take productive players from high profile programs and run with it. And that's kind of what they did here at the top again. So until the Eagles give us a reason to be super upset at the Eagles drafts, we're not going to be super upset at the Eagles drafts here. So,
yeah. And now to a team that until they have a quarterback, nothing really matters. And we both believe that they still don't have a quarterback, even though they traded back up into round one and drafted one. However, they did get two of potentially the most dangerous pass rushers at their positions in college football last year.
Mm-hmm.
And it really feels like they're trying to build those wild card run teams where they just absolutely beat the crap out of you with pass rush and then pray that everything else comes together and they're able to win 17 to 14 games.
Yeah, this draft rules. Again, do I think it's going to save Joe Shane and Brian Daboll's jobs? No, I do not. No, I do not. But whoever the next head coach and GM pairing is who comes in 2026 and maybe another high pick to go draft a quarterback, you've got a pretty firm rookie class here to work with. Again, much of this draft just kicks ass. Abdul Carter and Darius Alexander in the top 65 is unbelievable. That defensive line is, you mentioned, it's just kick ass. And
what are you supposed to do here?
Nothing.
What are you supposed to do here? With it's absolutely ridiculous. You have Abdul Carter, you have Kayvon Thibodeau, you have Brian Burns. Chauncey Golston is a decent player. Dexter Lawrence. Roy Robertson Harris, Nunez Roaches, Ledbetter, Darius Alexander, GJ Davidson. Like, it's not even just the first guys, mm-hmm. but even the second guys off of the bus are decent rotational guys as well.
Yeah.
They picked up Paulson Adebo, who I know that's going to be a long road to recovery for him, but they picked him up. They drafted Tyler Newbin last year. Javon Holland is a really good football player. Deontay Banks needs to come together, but truthfully, like, they have pieces, and Cordell Flott has given them good snaps as well. And so, like, they have pieces defensively. Bobby Okereke is a really, really good football player. Like, they're putting together the roster.
But can
Russell Wilson do enough this year to save their job with this roster? I think that he could.
Oof.
They just need to show improvement.
Yeah.
I mean, like, because what are the, you can't expect this football team. What you have to do is you need to objectively look at the roster that they've been able to create over the past couple of years, how they have done it, and then say the quarterback just isn't there in a division where you are fighting against the champions, a team with Dak Prescott that is improved from last year, and a team that absolutely took off because they had the second pick and they absolutely spiked on Jaden Daniels. Like, those are three teams that you could legitimately say are 11 or 12 win teams. What the hell are the Giants supposed to actually do in that division? Like, what can the realistic expectations be? And that's why I think that there is a good chance that they're able to retain their jobs for another year.
Hmm. It's year four. And that's where, like I say, it's going to take a little bit here to save their jobs, I think. Because it's year four and they've almost been fired 2 years in a row. And they've come back and the owners at the last second has changed his mind about not firing these guys. So honestly, I don't know how Joe Shane kept his job after the Hard Knocks look. Like, that's hard to come back from. I'm not optimistic that they keep their jobs, but I do think that they've got some pieces here. And I like the running back room paired up with Tyrone Tracy and Cam Scataboo here now, two young backs. I like that. I love Marcus Bowe. Like, Marcus Bowe could start tomorrow, but I think he's going to be put in a position where he's probably going to be a utility player in year one, being a fifth-round pick. But that's a guy that we had day two grades on. So that's, again, one of my favorite picks of the draft there. Like, this is a fun draft.
Dude, that's what I'm saying is, like, look at this roster. This roster is actually good. Mm-hmm. Malik Nabers, Darius Slayton, like, the wide receiver room is not awesome, but Andrew Thomas, John Runyon, John Michael Smith, Greg Renton, Van Roten, and Marcus Bowe there. Stone Forsythe is backing up Illuminor. James Hudson is in the building now. Like, they have really attacked needs and tried to gain some depth here too. And tight end is a little ugly, but they have a ton of names there.
I like Theo Johnson. Johnson a little bit, yeah.
I like Daniel Bellinger coming out and in that first year. Greg Dulcich is a big dude. Manhurst can be a blocker. And then they went out and they drafted Fidone, who could be a little bit of a route runner, big slot type of guy as well, if that's what he ends up being for them. But you have Russell Wilson, and Russell Wilson stinks. And Jameis Winston is there. Jackson Dart doesn't need to play in year one, and he absolutely shouldn't. And he probably shouldn't play in year two either. But that, at the end of the day, he doesn't have to play. And so, yes, we hate that pick because we didn't love Jackson Dart. But he's in a good position to not destroy his career immediately, because there is no excuse for him to play this year.
Yeah. I mean, he won't. Unless something really drastic happens, he won't.
You would need Wilson, Winston, and DeVito all to get hurt, in my opinion.
Probably not DeVito in my mind. I don't know if DeVito makes his team anymore. Like, teams don't roster four quarterbacks.
It doesn't matter if he makes the team. Nobody else is going to roster him.
Well, you think they'd elevate practice squad and start him over a rookie Jackson Dart?
Yeah.
I don't know about that. I don't know if I'd go that far, but definitely they put themselves in a position to roll out with Wilson and Winston for sure, which is just a heck of a freaking quarterback room. It's like a Looney Tunes card. It's a Looney Tunes quarterback room.
Yeah, two absolute goons. in very different ways. Just goofballs in very different ways. But yeah, I mean, let's go down through the rest of this draft. Fidone and Corey Black. Do you have anything to say about Corey Black?
I like Fidone quite a bit. I like Fidone a little bit. I shouldn't say quite a bit, but he's a decent player. A fun little 12-13 piece.
Alexander. That's such a disgusting pick.
Do you think if Darius Alexander was 2 years younger, he would have gone from the first round?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, the dude's 305 pounds. He can rush off, legitimately rush off the edge.
Yeah. Maybe the best player at the Senior Bowl.
Yeah.
Well, Shamar Stewart, but, that was there the whole week. Best player at the Senior Bowl that was there the whole week, we'll say.
I don't know, man. I think Alexander might have been even more dominant. Like, that's how good he was down there. He was freaking awesome down there, man.
Yeah, he was. He was indeed. And again, the names you listed out there, he might start over Roy Roberts-Harris.
See.
Yeah.
I thought he was a runner too. Rookie. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's grade these. Yeah. All right. Commanders. So their composite grade was about a 3.04. Again, this is a really good divisional draft here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm giving them a B+. Like, I really like their, because I'm only grading off of who they selected, where they selected them, and I like the value on all of them.
Yeah, B+ is very okay with me. Dallas Cowboys.
The Dallas Cowboys are an A for me. I think all of the first five picks, all of the first six picks, seven. All of their top seven picks I like. Phil Maffa has no juice, but it is what it is. I like him as a player, but he's very much like an even more watered down version of Najee Harris, who is a watered down version of a good running back. So,
and you could tell that he was hiding his shoulder, and he had shoulder surgery right after the season ended. You could tell he was hiding his shoulder when he's trying to run, which is something a big running back can't do.
A 235 pound running back. Yeah.
So yeah, his tape wasn't very good this year. I'm going to stick with the B plus here as well. I like the value of a utility player in round six right there with Cornelius. Again, yeah, we'll stick with the B plus. I like the B plus.
Yeah, I'm giving them an A minus personally.
Cool. Yeah. Philadelphia.
It's an A. I mean, it's an A. it's an A. The only reason it's not an A plus for me is Jahad Campbell is a linebacker from Alabama with knee and shoulder issues. Yeah. And that gives me pause because that's a trend for Alabama linebackers. But other than that, like, I really like where they got value everywhere else.
Yeah, I agree.
They crushed it.
I agree. New York Giants, I'm going to go A minus. Again, this is the dart pick and the donation of two third round picks to go up and get him away from being an A plus. I think, like, they legitimately might have drafted five starters in those first five picks if dart pans out here.
Well, and if they would have sat and picked him, this is
and an I don't A think he draft. Would have gone before 34.
This is an A plus draft if they just sit and pick him.
Yeah,
but. Because they traded up and because I don't love the player, I'm going to give this draft an A-, which is the same grade I gave the Dallas Cowboys. And it's because of, like, the value of that very high pick. Like, the value of Tyler Booker was just a little bit off for me.
Yeah.
The value of going and getting Jackson Dart's just a little bit off for me. But other than that, this division did a really, really good job overall at improving. And this is a division that already had three really talented football teams. And the Giants have really turned that roster around and are good quarterback play away from being a 9-win team. So it'll be really interesting to see how this division pans out this year, because if there's one thing we know about the NFC East, it is that the team that won the division the year before will not win it this year.
Yeah.
That is what we know.
Yep. Should be a fun little throwdown here in the NFC East this year, but that's it. That's another episode. We only got one division left to grade here.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. So we'll come back and we'll hit that next week for Tuesday's episode. And then Wednesday's episode, I got a surprise. I'm not going to spoil it yet, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. But that's all I got. Do you got anything else, Dalton, here?
I do not know.
Awesome. Well, that's been it. Another episode of the Daft on Draft podcast. Oh, I do have an announcement right at the end. I completely forgot. We're on a podcast network now.
Oh, yes, we are.
Yeah. We joined the Believe podcast network. So the Daft on Draft podcast is now a part of the Believe podcast network. So that's pretty cool. It also means you'll start hearing some ads, but you boys got to make some money somehow. So. That's all we got. Until next time, stick around and listen to the Daft on Draft podcast as we break down the NFC West and close out these grades. Until then, goodbye.